Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. It's a Thursday. Billy Lucci, Trevor Knight. The Lucci cast with Billy Lucci and Trevor Knight.
There we go.
Funny how that works.
Let's do it.
Let's get to it this week, Trevor, because we got a couple guests coming in. Let's just go through the conferences. We talked a ton of A&M and A&M Kentucky. Let's dive right into this around college football right now. And we'll probably talk more A&M Kentucky with our national college football guy and probably with R.C. Slocum this week as well. So let's just dive in and go around the country in college football. And let's go. SEC.
SEC.
This week in the SEC, last week in the SEC. Big one in College Station, but also a big one in the Swamp.
That's right. LSU. Man, remember a couple weeks ago we were talking LSU Auburn, and I'm like, yeah, I don't like LSU. I don't think there's anything. Joe Burrow, blah, 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 blah. LSU's a team to beat right now. I mean, they're playing good football. That's going to be a hard-nosed, really fun, exciting atmosphere in the Swamp this week, especially coming off of their dominating win over Ole Miss this past weekend.
Burrow looked really good.
I like LSU in the game, I'll be honest.
Florida coming off a monster, emotional victory over Mississippi State in Dan Mullen's return. Mississippi State, Trevor, can we agree, they're out of it.
They're out of it.
They have no chance in the way. You know, if people thought they might be Bama's primary competitor, they're no better
good.
Than
good. No, they've fallen off and they're not playing good football anymore.
Fifth or sixth best team in the West right now until they figure out what to do with Nick Fitzgerald. That's a square peg round hole.
Isn't it funny what we do? We sit here and talk and think that we're really smart and we know how the whole season's going to shape out week one and two. Here we are week five and six, you know, middle of the season, not even the middle of the season, and everything has just flip-flopped.
Well, you've got a panel full of experts here at Texas that are getting their teeth kicked in right now by Miss USA and the Pick'em contest.
It's I'm an expert. You're an expert. But yeah,
apparently not. Apparently, we're going to lose our expert card if she runs us all off the set with these picks this year. But it's early, as Gabe pointed out. We are Mississippi State, but everybody jumped on them. Dan Mullen's an important part of that. And Dan Mullen now in Gainesville, Felipe Franks playing a lot better. Although their offense can't get it done against LSU's defense, in my opinion. I think LSU chokes them out. And whether that's 20-13 or 34-3, LSU is going to get that one.
I agree. And I think that, you know, down the road, is Florida going to be a lot better than we've seen the start of the season? Absolutely. But it's that culture thing. You got to give time for most coaches to come in, set their culture, set their precedents. It's just not going to happen this year, especially this early in the season.
There's one team that can crash the party, per se, and it's probably Kentucky, because Kentucky has to play Kentucky has to play Georgia still. And if they could get by A&M, they can be like a gate crasher. But really, we're almost down to like this round robin between LSU, who plays Georgia, and Bama. I think both in Baton Rouge, I think. Yeah, both in Baton Rouge. And Bama, you know, if they eventually play Georgia. It's almost like a three-team round robin to see who the one or two in the SEC in the playoff is. So that moves us on to other conferences and how do they fare in the playoffs. Who do you think position themselves the best this week for the playoff? My answer, and we'll start there, and then I want your answer because we'll go to another. I say Notre Dame. They beat the brakes off, I think, an overrated Stanford team that probably should have had the brakes beat off them a week before in Eugene. Things kind of got crazy there. Notre Dame, man, you look at their schedule, I think I'm very confident with the move they've made at quarterback and how well he's playing. I'm very confident that they're going to take one of the four spots.
I think that's a good assessment. I think the emotional win, and we'll touch on it in just a second, in the Big Ten, the Ohio State win over Penn State. Yeah. That at Penn State, college game day, that's a big-time one. I think Ohio State solidified themselves. Yeah. I know they've got a few little speed bumps in the rest of their schedule, but I think
you got Michigan State, and probably Wisconsin.
Battle-tested. Boom. I think
they are.
If I had to pick a school this early on, I think it's Ohio State.
I would too.
Let's do the Big Ten then. So that was the big game of the week.
What do you think of that final play call, fourth down? You're a guy that can run that zone read. That was your specialty. What'd you
everybody
think
around the country saying, put the ball in Trace McSorley's hands. He's your guy. He's your guy. Mm-hmm. Fourth and what, five? And you run inside zone. Yeah. Again, we could go round and round about it. Just like a couple weeks ago when we were talking about the two-point play against Clemson here at A&M. If it works out, hero. Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. It didn't work out. Again, I'd probably pick a different play than inside zone, regardless what the scheme was. That sucks for them, especially being at home, big-time win or big-time game. Ohio State found a way to
give
win.
Give them credit, man.
You need – I don't know if you knew this, Billy, but one more point. All you need is one more point than the other team.
Is that what they had? Is that it?
I think it was.
I was impressed, man. They were kind of dead and buried there for a minute, and then the guy makes a great catch. How he slipped his body backwards, caught it, still kept running – took it to the house. All of a sudden, oh, crap, we're in a football game again.
Absolutely.
Penn State was in total control. They were going for two there to put themselves up, 17 with a few minutes left. So, yeah, credit Ohio State. That's the kind of win that when it comes time to – for because one or couple conferences might get left out this year. When you have a win like that on the road, that's what gets you in.
I think another team, and we'll switch over to the Big 12 here, that – is putting themselves in a good position is Oklahoma. We talked about last week, they played bad against, not bad, but they played close against Iowa State, played way too close against Army.
That was bad.
Kyler Murray went off this week.
If we're saying A&M played bad against Arkansas, they certainly played bad against Army.
So I'm not ready to put them in that conversation yet,
yep.
But College game day this weekend, Cotton Bowl in Dallas, I'm going to go to the game. Like you said a minute ago, or on Tuesday, Dallas, Texas, it's going to be a rocking place this weekend. So I'm going to go to that game. This, I hate to say it because we talked so bad about Texas early in the year, but this is a big time game for Oklahoma. If they can win this, then they might put themselves in that position.
Can I let you in on a little secret of mine?
Let's hear it.
I am not buying OU yet. I want to see them this weekend.
Biased.
Here's the thing. They beat UCLA, who might not win a game this year. They beat Florida Atlantic. They beat Iowa State in what wasn't a pretty game. They couldn't beat Army in the allotted 60 minutes. They had to go to overtime with the Service Academy. And this past week, they played Baylor. This is the least tested team in the top 15.
And they still have to go on the road to Tech. I know they lost their quarterback, but they can score. They're playing good football.
West Virginia.
And to West Virginia. That one scares me a lot.
So that's my prediction. My second is no one comes out of the Big 12 undefeated. I think between Texas, West Virginia, and Oklahoma, they beat up on each other. Texas already has a loss. Then there's the Big 12 title game. My prediction is Ohio State, Notre Dame, two SEC teams, and there's going to be a whole bunch of people crying in the Pac-12. The Big 12 and the ACC. Speaking of those last two conferences, ACC, talk to me about Trevor Lawrence and Clemson. Because they got a hell of a scare.
Last week, what if? We didn't even have to wait a full week, and we already saw
literally
what
2 days.
We already see what happens.
Yeah.
It's sad. It really is. There you go. That's the perfect example. You give a guy a starting spot, 4 games in the year, your other guy leaves, he gets hurt, what do you do? And credit to, I don't even know his name, it came in and played great, and got them the win, hostile environment, Syracuse playing good football, but that is just a nightmare situation. And then it really broke my heart, honestly. Hunter Renfrow, guy that came in as Mr. Clemson, says, hey, we understand why Kelly left, but this is the perfect situation, and we're disappointed in his decision.
Yeah,
man, that's tearing the team apart. That's exactly what that's doing.
Yeah,
you're tearing the team apart. Not that Kelly Bryant's wrong. I'm not putting it on Kelly Bryant, but the ability to tear a team apart like that it's going to happen more and more down the road. It's just sad. But they got the win.
I don't think Clemson runs the table somehow. If they do, then the committee's going to have a hell of it. If Clemson or the Pac-12's not going to have an unbeaten. If Clemson or OU let's say Clemson, OU, and Notre Dame are on the table. We'll talk about this later because that's has the potential to get nuts.
You got to go back to undefeated teams should get in first. But then, we've seen it happen before. I don't know. The old Knights down there at Central Florida,
they keep winning, too.
They keep winning, too. But, yeah, right, we'll get that later in the season.
And let's roll to the pack because this is the final conference for us to talk. By the way, just real quick, Florida State or Miami, who you got?
I got Miami.
Me too. Obviously. I think the turnover chain's going to beat whatever that purse is they're carrying around in Florida State.
Not even close. Pac-12, Washington got a big win against BYU. That disappointed me. I thought BYU was going to put up a better fight. And then I like Oregon. Oregon's playing good football.
I like their quarterback, Trevor Herbert. Yep. He's a stud. I think he's a top 10. Everyone's saying, high NFL draft pick. He's playing like it. Man, had they not screwed the pooch against Stanford, that game against UW would be an absolute beast. Washington is watching Auburn right now going, God, I wish we had that game back.
I know it.
They let that one slip through their fingers, and it's going to cost them dearly. That's about it in the Pac-12 right now. It's really not. Stanford got exposed as a fraud. They almost did the week before. I think Washington's going to handle them. That UW-Oregon game will be a really big one with some kind of fringe playoff implications. It'll be definitely one I want to tune in and watch. I agree.
Well, let's go down in the DMs here just real quick. We'll buzz through them today because we want to get to our guests.
We don't need to explain it. We know what they are.
So I'll start. I'm following Kyler Murray, 7 TDs against Baylor in the Heisman talk. I thought he played really well this week, especially coming off of a couple weeks where the offense didn't do as well as they wanted to do. 7 TDs, I mean,
yeah,
you got to follow them at least.
Yeah, I'm actually going to follow. Where was I going with this one? I'm following Dan Mullen in Florida in the SEC. I don't know how long that run will last. It's probably going to. Actually, I take that back. I'm following Joe Burrow. Because I didn't think – I've watched them, and I haven't been impressed with him as a passer. I'm following him, but I'm following him because I'm interested in seeing. I
want to
see him against a good defense. I want to see what does his page look like after he plays Florida in the Swamp. Not that they're great, but they're good on defense. Ole Miss was not. Does he revert back to kind of just being a guy, like a caretaker that doesn't put up really nice numbers, but they get by – because of everything else, or does he continue to develop into a playmaker? This will be the big test for that. Absolutely. Joe Burrow.
Okay, who you liking this week? I'm liking West Virginia, big win at Tech. I think Will Greer's fantastic. I think they're easily playing the best football in the Big 12 right now.
Yeah, that was actually the one I agree with you on. West Virginia, I think Greer is a stud. They're having fun. You watch them play with Dana and Jake Spavital down there. They're having fun playing football. Greer seems like a guy that has kind of been through a lot, and he's just kind of embracing, like, look, man, this is – so I West Virginia for me too. And if you're telling me OU's going to Blacksburg, I would tell you if you make me pick a Big 12 champ right now, I'm picking the Mountaineers.
There you go. I'm unfollowing the transfer redshirt rule.
Okay.
Think it's making guys look like bad teammates. We've hit it over the head a million times. I don't need to keep talking about it. The whole Kelly Bryant, Trevor Lawrence issue. Unfollowing the redshirt transfer rule.
I'm unfollowing Nick Fitzgerald and Mississippi State. I'm unfollowing Nick Fitzgerald. He was suspended for their first game this season, which was a little bit of an eyebrow raiser. He's just not fitting in that offense. So you can kind of lump in Joe Moorhead there too. He's not doing what Jimbo Fisher's doing in College Station, which is trying to tailor his system around Kellen's skill set. Instead, he's doing more like what Sumlin and Mazzoni are doing down there with Khalil Tate, and it feels like a square peg in a round hole, and it doesn't work. So I blame that on Fitzgerald a little bit. I blame it on Moorhead. And Mississippi State to go out to Kentucky and have 16 penalties, back-to-back losses, they're out. They were overhyped. They tried to downplay losing Dan Mullen like Florida State's trying to downplay losing Jimbo Fisher. You both lost two of the best coaches, maybe the second best coach in Florida State history, the best coach in the history of of Mississippi State. You can't replace those guys that quickly.
I think that's good. Who are you blocking this week?
Man, my block is going to be the national media for their response.
Me too.
Okay. Yeah.
Drives me absolutely crazy. So we can even take it a little bit further to the whole targeting and the NFL and all.
Yeah.
It all gets lumped together.
But I'm blocking the national media for their response to that face mask thing. It was very disappointing. You think you're disappointed in the coach for grabbing a face mask? I'm disappointed in the reaction to it. I did not like it at all. It left a bad taste in my mouth. And really, there are probably a few national guys I probably felt like actually blocking, but you just ride it out for a couple of days and people stop talking about it. But I think way too many people showed their ass on this one.
I agree.
And it wasn't Jimbo Fisher.
I agree. Reporting this week, I'm reporting UCLA. Poor guys over there. I mean, at this point, I feel bad. They lost to Colorado this week. They're 0-4. I think they have Washington this week.
By the way,
they could end up 0-6 before they even blink.
At some point, we need to mention Colorado. Maybe that'll be next week. But they're quietly going about.
Absolutely,
that's a good football coach.
I agree.
He's done a good job there. And if they keep building that, that'll be a tougher home and home than maybe A&M expected when they signed up for it. I'm going. Who am I blocking?
Who you're reporting?
Oh, I'll tell you who I'm reporting. I'm reporting Scott Frost, and I don't even know if I've done it before or not. But I mean, you're 0-4, Bubs. You're 0-4. I mean, at Nebraska, that what they're doing right now is embarrassing. This is a guy that said his team, I don't know what his words were. If they love losing or they enjoy. But
he said they're undisciplined because it looks like they enjoy losing whenever they're cheering on their teammates on a kickoff.
It's a bad situation in Lincoln right now.
I don't know what to think of that.
But he went in there so arrogant, and he talked so much smack about the SEC, and he was so arrogant at UCF with what they were doing while not playing anyone, and they went and beat Auburn in one game. And the guy, he just strikes me as smug. And he went in there, and I think it goes to show – I'm blocking new coaches too. It goes to show Kevin Sumlin at Arizona, Scott Frost. You mentioned Chip Kelly. Willie Taggart.
Until now.
But look, I mentioned Taggart, right? There's somebody else we're forgetting in that – oh, Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee. These new coaches at these big programs, Mario Cristobal doesn't count. He came up through the system. But Dan Mullen and Jimbo are the two that are clearly getting the most buy-in.
And I think Jimbo's even ahead of that.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And they play a much tougher schedule. And the records are still, I think, the same. But you can't – well, I guess Florida's got one loss right now. But you can't – the buy-in – everybody wants to demonize Jimbo this week. The buy-in that those two guys are getting, part of it, I think, is because they're so experienced as head coaches. Of all the hires, they're the two that were by far the most accomplished.
Yep.
And you look at Tom Herman last year and the struggles they had at Texas. It is hard to go in year one and get the full scale buy-in. Ed O didn't get it last year. They had to have that team meeting. They had to meet with the AD and the president, and after they lost to Troy. It's hard to do what Fisher is doing here right now. And that, to me, is as impressive as anything we're seeing in A&M football. And then finally,
sliding in the DMs,
who
baby.
Who is it?
Notre Dame, 38-17 over Stanford.
Brian Kelly.
They got Virginia Tech this week. Could be another top 25 win. I like the way that Notre Dame is playing. Who you got?
Yeah, I think Notre Dame is playing great. I'm actually – mine is actually going to be – I'm going to go with – because I don't want anyone to know it. Because it's secretive, it's Kyler Murray.
There you go.
Because he, even though OU hasn't, I'm not buying them, it's because of their defense. It's not because of Kyler and CeeDee Lamb. That's the most dynamic connection in the country as far as I'm concerned.
And that dude's got a fallback plan, too. He's got $5 million in his pocket and can go drop everything and go play baseball. And he's still playing as well as he is. Pretty cool.
We got a lot to talk about after this. We got a couple great guests coming up right now. And it's a big weekend of football. Kentucky A&M, Texas OU, Florida LSU in the swamp. It's another big weekend of Major League Baseball. The playoffs get going. Sorry, Ranger fans, but the Astros trying to repeat as World Series champs. ACL for Alex Parker and you folks in Austin. I'll try to get down there at some point. But a fun October.
That's right.
Halloween's upcoming. The leaves are changing. It's football season, though, more than anything else. All right, this is Billy Lucci, Trevor Knight, with some we forget sometimes Trevor has school. He's working on his master's right now. So not only was his birthday yesterday, he has some midterms today. So Billy Lucci joined by an old friend and Aggie legend, R.C. Slocum. Coach, this is a big weekend for Aggies everywhere, A&M Kentucky. It's doubly big for you. You've got a reunion this weekend of the last team to win a conference championship at Texas A&M, a group near and dear to both of our hearts, the 98 Aggies.
Well, I'm really looking forward to seeing this group, Billy. They were a special group, as you said. They won the Big 12 South in 97, which was our second year in the league, and we were beaten by a really good Nebraska team who went on and played in the Orange Bowl and beat the SEC champion that year was University of Tennessee, and they beat them about like they beat us, which was pretty convincingly. But this group came back in the all season, really, I think, resolved to come back the next year and be better, and they were. We came back. Nebraska came in that year ranked number two in the nation. We beat them at home, and then we went to the Big 12 championship, and K-State was number one in one poll and number two in the other poll, and we beat them. So really a fun bunch of guys to work with, and so many good stories within that team.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun group to see. And little piece of trivia for you, Billy Lucci's first game to cover Texas A&M, Florida State, in, was it still the Meadowlands at that time?
Playing the Meadowlands, sure did.
You and Bobby Bowden going at it. That was a heck of a Peter Warwick, Chris Winkie. That was a heck of a team. And, you know, it's an early season loss, Coach, to a premier program, a national title contender. I think they played Tennessee for it that year. You know, looking at this team, and they've played Clemson and Alabama so far, number one, number two, what did your team learn from that football game? Now, that group was a little more veteran, I get it, but what did you guys learn from, you know, you went toe-to-toe, that was a very competitive football game, you came up short. In what ways did y'all get better from that experience?
Well, first of all, I'll address your question, but first, to even be in the game, you know, I had a call in the off-season call, the Pigskin Classic, Peter Ball said, you know, we're interested in you playing in our game, and we're not sure. I said, well, who would we play? Well, we don't know at this time. We'll talk. We want to see if you had any interest. I said, yeah, we have a lot of interest.
Yeah.
And my thought at that time, we were trying to elevate the program, trying to elevate our exposure of Texas A&M and trying to get on that national scene. And I said, yeah, we'd love to do that. So then they called back in a week or so and said, well, we got some bad news. There's not a whole lot of people out there who want to play y'all. So
yeah.
The only team looks like right now, the only team we can get is Florida State, and they're probably going to be ranked one or two preseason. So what I said, hey, that's fine. And they said, you mean you play Florida State? And, you know, you could go back and criticize me for that if you wanted to. It'd probably be fair or saying, you know, why expose your team? I saw it differently. I saw the opportunity to take a bunch of kids to New York and play in a nationally televised game against one of the premier programs in college football could not be anything but positive for us.
Yeah.
And a lot of times that statement, I think people misconstrue, well, he didn't really go up there to win. You know, that's all bull. We went up there to win the game.
Absolutely.
But what I said was, win or lose, it would be a win for us because of the exposure and trying to elevate our program, and for our players to get the experience of playing against a team that everybody was saying was going to be one of the best teams in college football. And so to get back to your question, I think it gave us, we came away disappointed that we didn't win that game. you know, was a couple plays. Peter Warrick made a couple of big plays in the game, a punt return, a great catch in the end zone. Yeah. We dropped a pass. We had a chance to run one in for a touchdown on an interception. And so it was one of those games, like you said, it was very competitive. And we were disappointed. And I think our players came away from that and said, you know what, we should have won that game. We could have beat, you know, they're supposed to be the best team or one of the two best teams in the country. We could have beaten them. And
yeah.
If we go back to work, we're going to have a great season. So we came out, we won 10 straight games after that. And we go into the last regular season game, and we lost our quarterback with a broken collarbone in that game. And so that experience was good for us. It was a good experience. The trip was good. I took them, one of the fun things, the last day of regular practice. You know, you got to fill that time doing something.
Yeah.
Other than sitting in a hotel looking at hotel walls, you know, we'd had a million meetings for that time, and coming out 2 days. So the last day, the day before the game, I had our buses, and we took the team, and we went over to the Apollo Theater in Harlem. I got them all little cheap throwaway cameras. And so we rode over to the Apollo Theater and got out and let them take some pictures there. Then I brought them down to by Central Park, took them to by Madison Square Garden, and then took them over by Wall Street and then to the United Nations building on the east side. And we got on a little boat and rode out around the lower Manhattan and rode out by the Statue of Liberty. And took some pictures there, and then we got off the boat on the Jersey side and went straight on to the Meadowlands to practice. And, you know, that's one of those things I've had those kids over the years, grown men now, reflect back about how meaningful that was. I asked before the game, and none of them had ever been to New York. And I thought, you know, for college players, college students, much of these kids, all of them, have never been anywhere. I said,
wow.
You know, it'd be a shame to go straight to the airport in Newark, go to a hotel, and go from there to the practice field, back to the hotel, and do that the whole time, and come home and get said, well, I've been to New York, but all I saw was a Holiday Inn and inside of a stadium.
Yeah.
So I wanted to be more than that. And that was an education trip for a bunch of college kids. And then the game they played, we played really well in that ball game. I guess a great foot, like you say, Winky and, you know, a whole bunch of those guys on that team. That was a good Florida State team.
Oh, yeah. I think there's a lot. I think of that game. I think of the 2012. And I'm not saying that this team will go on to those levels. I think eventually this program will. But I think of that. I think of talking to Johnny Manziel after the 2012 Florida game, and I think of these guys coming off the field after the Clemson game this year, and it was the same refrain against these top one or two teams where you said, man, we know we could have and probably should have won that football game. I think that,
yeah.
I think that's a great thing, and I think that's why you saw Jimbo kind of embracing this first month of the season. The key is to get out of it healthy, as you know, and I think they've done a pretty good job of that going in. What do you think of this game at Kentucky? Because I'm going to tell you, this Wildcat team, Coach Slocum, reminds me of teams that you coached against a lot and then throughout the Big 12 years. They remind me of those better Missouri teams in what they can do. They're just kind of well-rounded all the way around. They got a great pass rusher. Really good running back, dual threat quarterback, and they're just a veteran, physical, nasty football team that's coming in here to Kyle. They're good.
Well, you know, that's a reflection of their coach. You know, Stoops has been around, you know, his family has been around really good football, and he coached with Jimbo down at Florida State. And so they're a well coached team. They'll be a physical team. They're an SEC team, and, He knows how it works, you know. So
yeah.
They'll be one of those teams that you'll have to beat. And that's one of the things that I think our fans are growing to understand and hopefully appreciate is that every week when you line up and play in the SEC There are no gimmies in there.
Yeah.
That's going to be a fight every week. And it's hard to tell before the fight, well, this is going to be tougher than that one or whatever. You can just go ahead and count on it. Every week it's going to be tough. It's going to be a fight. And that's how you get better. And that's really what, if you're a real competitor, that's where you want to be. You know, I listened to an argument yesterday. And, you know, I probably shouldn't even say this, you know, but it was talking about, you know, Florida talking about, they should be the national champion this year. What's the FCS school?
UCF.
You know, yep. Making this impassioned deal that, you know, we want to win it this year. We don't, you know, I said, you know what? Someone made one of the announcers on that said, you know, they can't do anything about their schedule or whatever. And then the other said, yeah, they can. You know, they can schedule. If they want to, you know, just show everybody to schedule three or four Power Five schools in those first four games and see how you're doing that. And if you beat all of them, then, you know, and go on and end up undefeated, then your argument's a little stronger. But it takes a toll on your team when you line up week after week after week, and you've got the physical teams that we have in the SEC. And, you know, it's hard going through that thing. Week after week, there's no easy ones in there. Everybody's got some big guys. Everybody's got some speed. They're all well coached. But that's the way you want it, you know. And I'm proud that we're in a league, that we can make a legitimate argument that we're in the best league in the country. And
it's something you were always a proponent of, dating to way back. Am I right?
Oh, we tried. I mean, we would play in Arkansas. You know, every year we played LSU. We beat LSU 6 out of 7 tries.
Oh yeah, like a drum.
So I said, I'd love to go in that league. I'd love to go in there and play. It'll just make us better. And I was doing everything I could do. John David was in agreement. He was in the AD at the time when this first started. And our board of regents, our president, everybody was. We were in unison. We had a meeting, discussed it. And I was given permission to call Roy Kramer, who was the commissioner at that time, and said, Roy, looks like this Southwest Conference thing is about to unravel.
Yeah.
And we're looking to see if it does, in fact, happen. We don't want to be seen as breaking it up. But if, in fact, it does unravel, we'd like to know what option we would have with the SEC. Would there be any interest? And so Roy says, you know, I can't answer for our presence, but let me check around. I'll call you back. So he called back in a couple of days and said there would be strong interest in A&M.
Okay.
And so we were kind of, that's what we had our mind set on. And then some politics got involved and we couldn't do it.
But, yeah, right.
So I was glad. I was standing up on the table when it came up again. We had some people that were opposed to it. And I'm thankful with our administration at that time, regents, chancellor, whatever, everybody, president, was bold enough to step out there and say, you know, this is a big step, but we're willing to do that. And I've talked to a lot of people since we've been there last couple of weeks ago at the Alabama game. I sat with one of the Board of Regents members and with Paul Bryant Jr.
Okay.
And they couldn't be happier to have us in the league. You know, they're thrilled that A&M's in there. And everyone that I've talked to, I know people at the conference office, and they're all just have been very pleased with A&M being in the league. They think that we have actually brought a lot to the league. Our sports other than football have competed very well. Our basketball won it a year ago, 2 years ago, and our softball, our track, everybody in there, we're competing. We've become a good member of the league, and we're taking bold steps to get our football where we'd like it to be in terms of competing in the league.
Well, and you talk about a fit and A&M fitting into that league. I don't think I've seen a better fit for a coach to a program since I saw you patrolling the A&M sidelines back in the day now than Jimbo Fisher. I mean, it just seems like personality-wise, culture, style of play. We're having Billy Gillespie on tomorrow, who's another tremendous fit at A&M, and he and I could argue all day about whether he should have left for Kentucky or not. But
and you were presented with problems like that with LSU coming, the NFL. It's tough. But when you get that fit, and I feel like Jimbo Fisher on every level is such a great fit for Texas A&M and the SEC. Give us your thoughts before we go on what the Aggies have in Jimbo Fisher, because I know obviously you were very familiar with him for a long time before he made his way to College Station.
We could not have hired anyone with a better resume and a better fit for A&M. I mean, I put in that thing. Nick has done an unbelievable job at Alabama and at LSU when he was there. But, you know, he's not going to go forever. And his age right now, I probably wouldn't have been a good fit for A&M, because he comes in for a couple of years or whatever, then, you know, he said, okay, I've done all that I can do, and I got, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't even say that probably, but I'm just saying that when I'm trying to say that if you look around the country, any reasonable football person would have said, you know, there's probably two or three guys there based on not on speculation or, well, looks like they're good young coaches. They're guys that have done it.
Yeah.
You know, they've been involved and done it. And you could make an argument for Urban Meyer, for Nick Saban, for Dabo, and Jimbo Fisher. Those are those are the only four guys. They, you know, it's a huge step. When you put those four up there, there's no one else on the same level of those guys in terms of been there, had the experience, and have done it.
Yeah.
And so I feel really good about, you know, his plan coming in, seeing, you know, since he's gotten here. He knows how to recruit. He knows the importance of recruiting. He knows the importance of having a physical team. And you can see that with the style. I saw something this morning. I was reading somewhere about the balance, you know, on offense and how that affects your defense. You know, that, you know, we've talked around it and said, oh, God, you know, we got to get the wrecking crew back. We got to do this or that. I said, you know what you got to do? All that getting better on defense starts in practice.
Yeah.
With the scheme that you have in practice where your defense has a chance to go out during the week and practice against a physical offense. And then you take that to the game, you're better prepared to play defense, but also during the game to have an offense that can slow it down, can control the ball, and can stay on the field some. You know, and
no doubt.
Defense would not have to play the whole ball game. That's a great way to get better on defense. And it all works, and Jimbo totally understands all of that. I mean, his whole background, he's been around it, he understands it, he believes in it. And so I feel better than I've ever felt. I've been in 45 years.
Yeah.
And I feel better than I've ever felt about where we are as a program and where we're headed.
I always say now that it's commitment, meaning the administration in terms of, you know, something that I know you banged that drum for a long time back in the 90s was commitment. And by that, I mean in terms of facilities and that arms race and stadium. It's coaching, getting the right coach in there, and then letting that coach establish his culture. And then you said recruiting, so we'll call that a C, recruiting. Hey, is there a guy in your career, you had plenty of top 10 and top 5 classes, and you guys had a run there where you were getting whoever you wanted. Yeah, we've got you go everywhere from Reggie Brown to Reggie McNeil, you know, the 5-star that panned out, the guy, the diamond in the rough that you sent as a first round.
Right.
Is there one guy that stands out to you in your career when you look back and go, man, you know what? If I could only have that guy, that one guy, because I know Jimbo's recruiting a couple of them younger classes right now.
I'll tell you one right off the top
Who
of my
is
hat.
It?
I was honored that I'd known Archie Manning for a long time.
Yeah.
So the summer after Peyton's junior year, they picked out 5 schools that he was going to be interested in.
Okay.
And he went and visited those schools. And they paid their own way, paid their own expense.
Mm-hmm.
Archie called me and said, I'd like to bring Peyton over and sit down with you. And so Peyton came, and I've talked to him and his dad.
Really?
Several times about if, you know, that could have been the missing link. I think I had several teams in there. If I'd have had a Peyton Manning at quarterback, that might have been the miss. We might have won a national championship.
No question.
And, we had the offensive linemen. We had good receivers. We had the defense.
Running backs for days.
We always had a kicking game. I had great punters, great kickers. And the missing link, and one of the things that happened at that time was that the state of Texas was not there. People running options and everything. It's not like now. In the last 10 years, or maybe even a little more than that, with all the passing leagues, there have been a bunch of quarterbacks come out of Texas and play college football, play well in college, and quite a few going on in the NFL.
Yeah.
One of them, another one, I say Peyton, and one more guy. And it's all on me, the other guy. And that is Drew Brees.
Oh, man.
Drew Brees was a quarterback for Seth McKinney.
Yeah.
In high school.
I was going to say, Luann's probably still not let you live that one down.
Oh, I mean, I told he was an undersized guy. He had been injured. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that the rationalization I can have is his uncle, Marty Akins, was a starting quarterback for Texas.
Yeah.
Texas didn't offer him either. We didn't offer him.
Yeah.
Texas didn't offer him. Arkansas didn't offer him. Oklahoma didn't offer him. No one in this part of the country offered him.
Yeah.
Joe Tiller told me, I told Joe one time, I said, I got to be the dumbest guy around. You know, he said, no, let me tell you. He said, I was at Wyoming and couldn't find a quarterback in L.A. And someone told me about this kid. So we offered him, he committed, and he said, then I went to Purdue.
Okay.
And so I took him with me to Purdue. And
wow.
He said, after his freshman year at Purdue, I was so concerned about him, I went out and signed a junior college quarterback. Because I wasn't sure Drew could play. And he said, as I say, the rest is history. He got better and better and better. So anyway, every time I see Drew or talk to him, I said, man, I'll go to my grave, you know, thinking, what if we'd have had him, you know, and, you know, what if Peyton, you know, those guys. Because we had it all apart, you know. We had good guys. I'm not saying in any way I'm not demeaning the guys that we had at quarterback. We had some really good guys.
Well, you're talking about a couple of NFL Hall of Famers.
I didn't have NFL quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the Aggies said, wow, you know, we might have if you'd have coached them better or whatever. And I said, you know what? They go to Jackson State. They go to North Texas State. They go everywhere and find quarterbacks.
Yeah.
So they're looking for guys that have the heart and have the ability and do that. And we just didn't, you know, and we weren't the only one during that period of time that didn't have one. But
no,
those were the two. We had great running backs. I had several of those guys that went to the NFL and played at running back. A bunch of offensive linemen, tight ends. I had like four or five tight ends
in a row. Yeah,
and we had the scheme. I'd go to pro camps every year. Everybody joked about the Gulf Coast offense. You know,
yeah.
I made a comment this week about it.
I saw that.
Talking about the hook and lateral play, I said, man, we even had that one in the Gulf Coast offense.
Yeah, yeah.
I was taking my staff to pro camps, and you know, we knew the plays and all that. But there's some point, if you look at the NFL, it's the same way right now. If you look around, and not everybody has a Brady or a Rodgers or whatever, the teams that do, they're the teams that win and go to playoffs.
Speaking of Brady, I met him way back when after he'd won his first Super Bowl and had a long conversation with him about that 95 Alamo Bowl, and he redshirted on that team. He either redshirted or backed up Greasy, but as soon as I said I went to A&M and that I lived with some of the guys that played, I mentioned one or two in the NFL that I knew he knew, he went off, Coach, and he ticked off every guy on that defense that you guys had. He said that was the best defense I've ever seen in college. He goes, it wasn't even close.
Heck of a game. You know, Lloyd Carr was a coach, Bianca Batuka, Greasy, a quarterback, and we had a good ball game.
Imani Toomer out there.
Yeah, Toomer.
I want to let you go, but I want to get you back on at some point during. So we have so many things I want to talk to you about in terms of the state of the game of college football, things like targeting and the quarterback transfers. You know, back in today, Drew Brees probably leaves Purdue after 1 year with the way the game is now. So I
don't know that that's good. I don't know if that's good for kids. You know,
I think
making it easy for kids to quit.
Right.
And you know, I know all the arguments about, you know, if the coach leaves or this or that, you know, all those things have validity. But I can think back so many players. Dana Batiste is one that comes to my mind. Right off the bat, early in his freshman year, one day he doesn't show up. I asked the guys, "Where's Dana?" I said, "Well, Coach, I think he's got that Highway 6 look, you know."
So oh, man.
I take off over to Canyon Hall, and he's packing his suitcase. I said, "What are you doing, son?" He said, "Well, Coach, I can't play here. I'm leaving. I'm going somewhere." I said, "Wait a minute. You can play. You're a freshman. You're playing behind some real good guys, and you need some development, but you're going to play. You're going to be a really good player." So anyway, I just wouldn't let him leave. He stays and starts, goes to the NFL, the whole thing. You know, was a really good player for us. But you can't, you don't want to let kids, you don't want to facilitate them quitting. What you, you know, say, man, no, stay in there, hang in there. Let's make this thing work, you know, because there's not anybody around that when they took a new job or did whatever, didn't have some thoughts and said, "Oh, God, I don't know if I made the right decision or whatever." Well, if you got an easy way out, then you'd probably take it. But at some point, say, "Hey, stay in there and make that thing work." You know, you had plenty of time in recruiting to look at all the schools, to evaluate the reasons for going to school. So just hang in there and give it time to work. You know?
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's my thoughts on it. I don't, obviously, what I wanted to do is I wanted to do away with redshirting.
Just all together.
5 years, just 5 years to play 5 years.
Yeah.
And there's no, the academic people used to argue, well, that's increasing the cost, and it really wouldn't. Because that young man, in his freshman year that you're saying you're redshirting, he goes to every meeting, he goes to every practice, he does everything all week long, and in some cases he even suits up, and he's out there knowing he can't go in the game. He can't go in there right at the end if you got a 50-point lead. You know? So I'm saying let the kid go out there and get 8 plays and give him 5 years to play 5 years. The good ones are all going to be going in 3 or 4 years anyway, so you're not changing anything. They're not going to redshirt, and they're going to play 3. Sam Adams came in here and started – 3 years.
He wasn't playing 5, no matter what rule, right?
He wasn't playing 5 years. Yeah. So he left, but, you know, I can't even keep him 4 years. He was an 8 player picked in the draft after 3 years in college. Yeah, so anyway.
Yeah. Hey,
you got better things to do than listen to old ball
players. Oh, man, there's nothing, there's nothing better. I'm going to hit you with one more since you said Sam Adams, because I know I'm not going to get you to evaluate how they're playing defensively. I know you better. So I'm going to ask you this. Is there one guy, as we head out for the Kentucky game, is there one guy that you've been really impressed with on that defense so far this season that you think will be a key factor for the Aggies on Saturday night on that side of the ball?
Well, you know, I think Mac's that kind of guy. He's a little bit like Sam. You know, he's kind of built the same way. And I've been impressed. He's playing better this year.
Okay.
You know, they tell me he's lost some weight and everything, but I've seen him. You know, he's got some quickness to him, and it's one of those things that when Sam early on was in practice, you know, you could see he had tremendous ability. But I called him when I got him beside one day. I said, "Sam, let me tell you something, son. You got a lot of ability. But you know what? You're not going to be able to play." And he looked at me and said, "What, coach?" I said, "Okay, you play about 1 out of 3 plays. Do you start getting to the point where you can give great effort every play, you're not going to get on the field for us, man."
I said, "Man,
this thing's about playing all out all the time." And so anyway, you know, we went through a little development deal there his freshman year, early in his freshman year. And he grew into being one of those guys. So I see Mac, when I watch him out there, man, he's a load in there. He's quick and strong. And I think he's got a bright future.
All right, Coach Slocum, I really appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you and the whole gang this weekend. Thanks so much.
All right. See you, Billy.
All right.
That's R.C. Slocum. What a segment that was. What a way to cap off the week and send us into a huge weekend at Kyle Field. Texas A&M, Kentucky, 6 o'clock Saturday night, undefeated, number 13-ranked Kentucky Wildcats. We'll see if the Aggie football team can give them that same dose of medicine that the basketball team did here at Reed Arena last spring. We'll talk to you guys next week. We'll have Trevor back. We'll recap Kentucky, preview Texas A&M's road trip to South Carolina. Thanks, Gig'em, Whoop, the whole deal. Trevor's not here to help me out. We'll get back to it next week. Thanks.